We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, appropriately enough, the host of the Ryan Russillo podcast. It'd be funny if the host of the Ryan Russillo podcast was like Larry Johnson. Or just some other random dude, and just named your show after somebody else. I don't know. Have you considered that, Ryan?
I think you'd have to have some real juice in the industry to be to the point where you could just name it after somebody else and still right. Do really well.
You know, I mean, you got plenty of juice, man. I mean, you're up there in the juice factory. I mean, you don't have enough. I think you got enough juice for that.
Yeah, maybe in a couple of years we'll try it out. But after you leave ESPN, I don't think the first thing you want to do is hide from everyone.
Just kidding. So. Hey, Ryan, we were talking in our first segment about how I think, you know, I think we all understand that we have to have some patience, but I think everybody's kind of running out of patience in terms of the league's making decisions. We're all dying for some timelines, some milestones to look at and say, hey, that day is going to be baseball or basketball or whatever. How's your frustration level for the lack of sports right now?
Well, I mean, I think there's a selfish part where we're all frustrated because yep. We just would like to have it on. But then I think as soon as you start doing that, you're like, okay, well, that's probably not something I want to tweet out. Like, hey, I'm so bored. Get your act together, you know. But, you know, on the baseball front, you know, I did a long podcast with Jeff Passan. As we can see this back and forth, like they're trying to figure out a new CBA on the fly. That almost feels impossible. You know, where the NHL and NBA seasons were basically done and all they had to do was kind of navigate a return through the playoffs. But, you know, I've talked to NBA people throughout this and I think I was more sympathetic to what they were going through just based on the information that I had from them, considering every time they had a plan, you know, the plan may fall apart the next day. Or, hey, let's throw a bunch of proposals together and what is even a possibility? Like the Orlando thing I always thought was a realistic deal because I've been there a bunch. I know the area. You know, they have these draft camps they used to have there before they moved back to Chicago and the facilities are there. It's isolated. And then I read today, like, they were actually going to open up some of the parks at Disney in July anyway. So then I'm like, well, wait a minute. What happened to the whole quarantine bubble situation that you were going to have in Disney in the first place? So I think as frustrated as everybody can be, which I understand, you have to understand the decision makers aren't screwing this up or they're not coming up with something definitive because they're incompetent. It's because they're navigating something that's so unprecedented and they're also trying to deal with the optics, public perception, and all these things where they can't seem so aggressive that they're also I guess the best way to phrase it would be like totally careless in the way they're risking some of the health factors here. And that also becomes a whole nother topic depending on which side of this whole virus debate you're on.
Ryan Russillo is with us. What's up, Ryan? What do you think about...
What's up, man?
Long time no talk. What do you think about the plan for the potential, kind of like the World Cup idea for the NBA?
I don't really understand why, on top of this, now we have... Like, I honestly think social media should have to verify you to be able to suggest proposal changes, too. Mm-hmm. Like, there should be another tier of verification. Because you know, what happens is, like, this has happened so much in the last couple of years where everybody is now, like, trying to solve every problem, and it always leads to just going, well, let's radically change this whole thing. I just want it to be at least 12 wins, maybe not the 16 we're used to for an NBA title, because I don't want that team or those players to be diminished because this isn't anything that happened. This isn't anyone's fault. This isn't something where it's like, okay, well, I can't wait to see who wins this NBA title so I can dump on him historically for years. So whatever version of it is, I just want it to be enough games so that it feels like it's real. Like the single elimination thing, despite the entertainment and the intensity of it, I was like, please never let that happen because then you could get some random team get hot for four games and win an NBA championship. And I don't really think that's the whole point of this thing. So, you know, the World Cup and the staging, I'm like, why are we adding all these different layers to make the product look even further from what it already is going to look like? Because when it does come back, it's going to look really weird without fans. It's going to be weird, and people are going to complain. And I'm not really in that mode where I want to rip apart whatever version of this gets going again because of how hard this is to try to figure out a way to have some conclusion to each of these seasons.
I get what you're saying. I do like the idea. I think it's creative, and I think it's an opportunity for all sports to try something different in a different situation. But I get what you're saying about credibility, and if you cut it down too much or mess with it too much when it's already being messed with because of lack of fans,
hey,
that could be an issue.
Look, that one wasn't, I think my reaction is probably based on all of the different proposals that I've seen.
Sure.
Like one where it goes, well, since the regular season, you can't get that done. And here's the thing, like the league is listening, at least the NBA here, the league is listening to the players because the players have been consistent saying, hey, it'd be great to get like a month of prep time before we run this thing up. It's like, man, basketball shape is basketball shape, especially at the level these guys play at. But some of the guys that are saying, I haven't touched the ball in 2 months, well, that's on you.
Yeah.
You can't find a driveway to dribble in. Like, that seems nuts to me. By yourself, you can't figure out a way to just even touch a basketball. So the NBA is doing this to try to get the full, not the full games in, but enough regular season games to help the players get back into shape and to also make sure the regional sports networks things are covered because there's some stuff in there that has all to do with money. But I think when I started seeing proposals where they go, they should just go 1 through 12 in each conference and plans, I'm like, why do I have to see a 21-win Knicks team now somehow viable for the playoffs? Like, what is that? So when I see those solutions, those are the ones where I just sort of lose it.
Ryan, by the way, listen to your most recent podcast with one of them, with Max Homa. Phenomenal. And my friends were like all texting me about it. Like, you got to tell Ryan that was a great guest. Awesome.
Is he
stuff
not the best? I mean,
awesome.
We DM'd a little bit here and there. I didn't really know him that well, obviously.
Yeah.
Now people are just like huge Max Homa fans, and
right.
I was pumped. He was great. Like, I can't wait to have that guy on again once he starts golf.
I love the fact that he can like go to a golf course and not worry about tucking his shirt in. Because some country clubs are so stuck up,
Yeah,
I thought Dustin. You love the stuck-upness.
No, I mean, sometimes, but not all the time.
See, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's all these things now that are older and traditional get ripped apart. And I think, isn't it okay if some courses just kind of want to have these old-school rules about the way you're supposed to be dressed? Like, I don't think it's that bad. Of it. I think it's actually kind of funny in a way.
I guess I kind of liked his point.
Yeah,
I liked his point about how they come at you to enforce the rule.
That's fair.
Because here's the deal. One time I got yelled at because I had my hat on backwards because I'll turn my hat around when I putt sometimes so I get the bill out of my face. I got
and
in the cart.
Athlete.
Yeah, I'm an athlete. So I had my hat on backwards for like literally 5 minutes or less. Got yelled at. It's the worst.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, there's definitely, look, guys have a really long history of not liking being told what to do by other guys. So when you throw in the country club part of it, and we all kind of like stereotypical, be like, all right, it's going to be this type of guy that's going to get in my case about the whole thing. But, I don't think it's the end of the world. I don't think it's the end of the world. When I know I've been that guy, untucked polo, boys weekend, ready to tee off. And the guy's like, hey, tuck in your shirt. And my first instinct is like, who's this guy? Like, what are you doing? Why are you talking to me? Like, and then you go, oh, well, because I'm at his course and this is what, follow the rules. That's all.
Right. We're talking with Ryan Russillo from the Ryan Russillo podcast, The Ringer. Ryan, getting back to the NBA for a minute, Damian Lillard yesterday talked about, if they try to come back and play some sort of regular season where they don't really have a chance to make the playoffs legitimately, that he would show up and not play. Did those comments surprise you, and do you think we'll see that from other guys?
It's two parts. Part of it is he's competitive. He thinks he has a chance. I get it. I mean, it's a Western Conference Finals team from the year before, even though that probably is a little fluky. It feels a little bit like when the Jets were in the AFC title game a couple years.
Yeah.
And you go, is that really where you live? Is that really the kind of team you are? Is that where you ended up in the playoffs? So you can sit there and argue, hey, they were in it, so that's legitimately who they are. They're not one of those teams. They're not. I mean, they ended up there. That's not really who they are. And so as the player side of it, I could see him being like, I need a fair shot at this whole thing. But it's also really selfish. It's hey man, yeah, like a global pandemic burst out, man. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to adjust. And we're going to do some things here. Some of the solutions are going to be things that you're not going to like. Not everybody's going to sign off on this. And that's one of the biggest problems. Like, anybody that's trying to put together these proposals to appease everyone, we better stop. Like, just give up, because you're not going to. So I get his point as a competitor, but I also think that it's kind of ridiculous. Like, hey, sorry that the Trailblazers aren't the number one priority in trying to get this season finished.
Are you of the mind that this delay helps or hurts a team like the Lakers with the stars being veterans, especially LeBron?
I really feel like all the conversation around it is kind of overblown both ways.
Okay.
The condensed schedule, meaning that, okay, they're older and now they don't have a chance. No. And some of the stuff with, I think it's kind of like the workout obsession stuff that we have now, where it's like, you know, I was fine tuning my body right as March and ready to build over those last 15 games. And then I perfectly tuned, you know, in May, and then another level of tunage. And you're just like, you know what? You're like 6'9", 250. You're an insane athlete. Like, you're probably going to be in really good shape. You've been one of the most durable players your entire career. Your longevity, your production at your age, specifically with LeBron, like, is beyond kind of what we're ever used to for a guy that's played that many minutes. So, yes, does it come up to him eventually? Sure. But I don't know that the shutdown completely derails the basketball version of LeBron that I would expect to see in the playoffs. Like, I don't think it would be this completely different guy. But we do know this, that if it doesn't work out, then, I mean, whoever doesn't win with this whole thing, they're going to use this as the excuse. Oh, yeah. The same thing with the NFL draft. Like, the NFL draft guys that screw up on first-round picks, they're going to say, well, you know, we didn't have all the scouts in the room, and, you know, we were using Zoom. Because, I mean, it's just human nature. So people will use this as an excuse. But I don't think the better teams – I was listening to guys the other day saying, oh, the Celtics are now going to come out of the East. Why? Because they're younger and there's a more condensed. You know, I don't know that the versions of this are going to be that much different because of the season being disrupted. But I could be wrong.
Ryan, when you had Kevin Clark on your podcast the other day, he's told a story about Freddie Kitchens that blew my mind on how clueless he was. How much do you think Freddie affected Baker's performance last year?
Yeah, the Freddie stuff isn't great, and I've heard people really like him as a guy. Guys that have played for him that I'm close with that have said, hey, he's the first guy you'd want to hang out with, and then you always kind of got like a bit of an eye roll about, yeah, just not really quite sure, wasn't really ever quite sure about him as the head coach. And, you know, for whatever reason, I think we all had this national interest in the Browns, so I probably watched more of it than I would have ever expected. And you know, I can't say that, like, day to day, you know, I don't cover, it's not like I cover the team, and the beat people always know this better than the national guys do. But just how the lack of preparedness every single week. And then, you know, whether it's the O-line falling apart, like, Baker's numbers drop, right? It is across the board. You just go through it. But I think the thing that scared me the most is that he'd gotten beat up so much that he looked like a different guy. That it wasn't so much like just the lack of confidence, but the lack of trusting that, like, the play was going to work out. I think if you're the head coach, especially an offensive coach who has the gig because you supposedly have this connection to your quarterback, like, it's almost like a point guard figuring out who on his team needs to get going, or who needs a bucket, or who needs a look, or let me get this guy going because we're going to need him later in the game. We've been ignoring him a bit in the offense. I think a coach, especially with a younger guy like Baker, has to go, hey, my guy's kind of falling apart in front of me here every week. I need to do something to try to turn this thing around a little bit. And it feels like they just kind of were like, hey, here's the game plan, and let's go get him and see what happens. And that certainly ended up, you know, Baker being a different guy. Although I do think we all overrated Cleveland and Baker's performance against what was ended up being a really bad slate when they had, what, that 7-1 run, yeah. And everybody was really excited about it. You know, they beat a lot of really bad teams with that, but it shouldn't have been this bad for Baker's second year.
You're right. He got overrated a little bit after the first year, and we all, especially locally, got all overhyped for the team last year. But it'll be interesting
to
see
you guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, it felt good to be fun,
yes.
Have it be fun and something to look forward to. So, you know, when people make fun of the Browns or make fun of Browns fans, I'm like, you know, this is one of the best fan bases in the country, and it felt real, and it was actually like, oh my god, this is gonna be like exciting. I can't wait to see what happens. So yeah, did they become overrated? Sure, but I don't think anybody should apologize for you guys having like real excitement for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, because every other year we picked them to win four games, so it was nice not to have to do that, even though it didn't pan out. But well, let me ask you this, right? When you look at this division with the three young quarterbacks, with Lamar and Baker and now Joe Burrow, you know, obviously the Ravens have been a much better franchise than the Bengals and the Browns. But purely looking at those three guys, now obviously Lamar was amazing last year in the MVP, but going forward over the next decade, in which order would you want to have them?
Well, yeah, I can't do anything with Burrow yet until I see it. As much as I love LSU and as much as I love his season and him having that it factor, he also had like five NFL guys and almost all first rounders to give the ball to. And it just was nuts. I remember being at Bama LSU and Daniel Jeremiah and I were joking about this when he came on my podcast too, is if you took every guy on Bama or every guy at the skill position set with LSU, like how many NFL teams would trade their entire skill group, receivers, tight ends, and running backs for either one of Bama's or LSU's, just one of those two teams. And he was like, I think I got up to like 23 or 24 teams. That's how absurd it was. So I love the Burrow it factor, the dude stuff that Dilfer talks about. But as I've talked about this now for years, is that, you know, 50% of these first rounders are going to be flameouts in 3 years. Flameouts. You know, there's no – it's just a harder position to evaluate than people want to admit. They want to blame GMs. They want to blame evaluators. Everybody loves making fun of scouts. But people just flame out on this stuff. So until I actually see a guy play in the pros, as much as I loved what I just saw from Burrow, I'm not going to put him ahead of anybody. And even I'll admit that, you know, I watched a lot of Lamar in Louisville, and it always surprised me some of the inaccuracies on clean throws. But then I go back and when we were doing this quarterback thing, as you mentioned with Clark, his year last year was insane. It was the 11th highest single season passer rating season, and passer rating is everything, but you know, he didn't get sacked. You can't tackle the guy. 36 touchdowns, six picks. He is horrifying to deal with, at least right now. And maybe there's some part of me that's still wondering if there's this little correction and the two playoff games are really bad. But I can't put anyone ahead of him in the division right now.
Hey, Ryan, last thing for me. No one follows the NBA more than you. As a Cavs fan, is there any reason to be is there any reason to be optimistic about the future? And what do you think about Colin Sexton?
No, they're pretty bad. They are.
yes, they are.
It's not anti-Sexton. And I even, you know, I was pretty high on Garland coming out of the draft, and maybe it was because he was more of the unknown that was going to go higher. And I was like, man, this guy's got some real shake in him, you know, and his shooting numbers are pretty good. And even though I kind of like backcourts where you just go, hey, we have two guys out there that get you buckets. Like, who cares about sharing and who cares about score first guards and who cares about these things? Like, it's about putting as many scorers out on the court at the same time as you can. But I mean, there's just a bunch of stuff I don't really get. I don't get Kevin Love's role on the team right now, the Drummond trade. And even if I like Sexton, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I hate Sexton or I really don't like Garland. That's not what I'm telling you. But if you just add up all the pieces and everything that you're looking at here, and even Porter, I could kind of get why he was an NBA prospect, even though the USC thing was pretty much a disaster. But I just, you add it all up, you add up the whole roster. I mean, let me know in a couple of years what's changed, and then I'll give you a better answer, because it's just not, I don't think there's really that much to be excited about right now.
No, there's nothing to be excited about. It really isn't. Ryan, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, hang in there, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Ryan.
Ryan Russillo, great to chat with him.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.